Good afternoon. Welcome to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Wow, what a show we have for you today. I get so excited about our shows. We have some really interesting topics coming up. You know, years and years ago, way before you were even a sparkle in your mother's eye, Aaron, I had somebody steal my identity. Back before it was even a thing, it was a really fascinating experience. Somebody set up a whole business in Las Vegas using my name and social security number. Took a really long time to unwind that. And we have an expert in identity theft here in the studio with us, Eva Velasquez. She is with the Identity Theft Resource Center. We're going to be talking with her in just a minute about what's going on in the world of identity theft, because I think you probably don't even know all the different ways that these folks can take your identity, use your information against you, use it to better their lives and worsen yours. And the impact of that on you and your family can be phenomenal. So we're going to talk with Eva in just a minute. After that, second half of the show, Martin Sabarsky's with us. He's with Solana. It's a company that I'm so jazzed about. This is really cool. I love the whole green thing. We're finding newer and newer ways, better and better ways to provide the products that our world needs and wants. And this guy's doing it out of algae. I'm seriously making so many different things out of algae. I wonder if he brought an algae shirt.
I don't know if his shirt's made out of algae, but we've got all sorts of neat things.
Oh, we
on
got
the
other
desk
things. Okay,
show.
And there's fuel, and there's all kinds of things that you can turn algae into just about everything.
Fuel for the car, so don't drink that.
Right.
Probably not the best thing to do.
And buzzword is sustainable.
Sustainable, yes. So we will talk with Martin coming up at the bottom of the hour. I'm very excited about the entire show today. Eva Velasquez, thanks for being here today.
Thank you so much for covering this really important topic.
You're the president and CEO of Identity Theft Resource Center. That's kind of a mouthful. That's a lot. Identity Theft Resource Center. What do you guys do there?
Well, we provide no-cost services to victims of identity theft, and we also do consumer education and awareness about a variety of topics, not just identity theft. So data breaches, scams and fraud, cybersecurity, and really are just trying to help people navigate this online, digital, mobile world and keep themselves safe and secure.
So you're in that real world of Mr. Robot.
I feel like I am sometimes. I really do.
If you don't know what that reference is, forget about it. It's too complicated.
How much of what you do is prevention versus after the fact, saying, something's already happened to me. What do I do now?
You know what? That's really interesting because over the first years during our inception, it really was after the fact. It was victim services, I would say, to 80 to 90% of the contacts that we had. And it's really shifted over the last 2 years. About 60% of the people that are calling us are not identity theft victims. They've had some kind of exposure. They're having an experience. Maybe they lost information or lost a cell phone. They were a victim of another crime. So they're really starting to reach out and get more proactive. And that, to me, just feels like we're really meeting our mission.
You talked about things other than identity theft, and you named off a couple. How many different, are there categories of this kind of thing that happens that you put things in? Like, is identity theft a category and then phone scams another category? I mean, is it broken down like that, or does each one have its own name?
Well, yes, the scams and fraud really are their own category, but you can be a victim of a scam or some type of other fraudulent activity and then also become a victim of identity theft. So we were just talking about the can you hear me or the yes
right,
scam.
Right, right, right. For those that don't know about that, tell everybody what that is real quick. Somebody calls you on a phone and...
Right now, people are calling on a phone and delivering some kind of opening line. Their whole motivation is to get you to say yes.
So it's like, can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. And you win.
And that's how easy
that was
it
a test. You passed. And so those types of scams, we call it the 1-2 punch because people will often part with their money, but then they also are parting with their information. So they may wire some money to a scammer, but they've also given out their passport number, their social security number. And lo and behold.
People still do this?
Yes.
In this day and age.
They do.
Wow. Well, I know somebody very close to me got a call from somebody claiming to be his grandson, and he was in jail, and the guy panicked and was going to go out and get $2,500 and deliver it. And if the mother of the son hadn't intervened, he would have brought $2,500 in cash. And he's not a stupid guy. He just freaked out because he thought his grandson was in jail and scared to death.
Oh, it's really, research has demonstrated that the scammers will play on that primitive part of our brain, and they'll hammer
at you. We want to protect people, we want to protect ourselves.
Right, it's a very emotional reaction, and so they'll stay on the line with you while you go to get the iTunes gift cards. And this particular research that I'm thinking about was in with our partner organization in Australia. The break in people's reaction where they would realize it was a scam was when they would put their phone down to pay. So as long as they had that connection with someone, just, you know, you've got to do this, you've got to do it now. They create a sense of urgency. Here's the resolution. Just go get it done. There's imminent danger. And until they engage the logical part of their brain to do this transaction, to pay at the cash register or whatever, that it's all emotional. So, and the scammers know it. That's why they keep doing it. It's successful.
And they can do thousands and thousands of dials a day with robo-dialing and all the other technology they've got.
It's almost like
they
psychological
warfare.
They
don't even have to dial if they just send you a text message saying, call me.
Which they can send out thousands and millions of times.
Are they somehow targeting people that they think are going to be more vulnerable? Or is this just mass spam and whoever responds,
it's a numbers
that's going
game.
To be their
It's
their
a numbers game. If
victim.
if you consider that it's about different factors like, do I actually know this company and recognize it? Do I have a relationship with them? Have I had a recent interaction with them? And frankly, how distracted am I right now? Am I calm and relaxed and had a great day, and so I can really assess the situation? Or are the kids running around and the dog is barking and
but
I have to make dinner?
People aren't thinking like that when they get a call and it's somebody claiming to be their grandson and they actually mm-hmm. believe that. How does somebody in the moment think that this might not be real when their main goal is to protect their family? I mean, is there some awareness?
I am so glad you asked me that.
Wow, that's why I make the big bucks. I ask those kinds of questions.
Say, that's a great question.
It is.
Thank you. Usually he gets that comment, not me.
Well, there is a really easy resolution for that, and it's go to the source. So we tell people whenever anyone has reached out to them, and I don't care what the platform is, if it's a text message, if it's a phone call, if it's an email, if someone is reaching out to you and making contact and you aren't 100% certain that that's who you're talking to, don't engage in that platform. You go to the source.
So what does that mean, go to the source? So somebody's called you and says, they claim to be your grandson, he's in jail. How do you go to the source on that? Do you say, give me a number to call you back?
Thank you for asking that. Oh, he's like, that's
on the phone. I'm giving you softballs. It's a setup here. Yeah.
No, you don't. You certainly don't want to click on the link, call the number that's in the email, or call the number that the person on the other line.
Don't click on the link.
No.
Don't check it out like that.
Never click the
link. And actually, our app, we have a free ID theft help app that has a case log feature for victims with all of the most frequently.
Wait a minute. You have an app for that? Hang on, we're going to talk about the app for that when we get back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Identity Theft Resource Center President and CEO Eva Velasquez is with us. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting today from the ESET Studios, ESET Internet Security. Do more. Want a podcast of the show? Of course you do. Go to ESPN1700.com. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Eva Velasquez is with us. She is the president and CEO of the Identity Theft Resource Center. Talking about the different scams and identity theft processes, there's just almost too much out there to even get in a couple of hours. It just seems like it's never ending. But before we went to break, we were talking about a possible solution. And I'd like to get that information to the listening audience before we talk more about the scams, because there's so many of them to talk about. You have an app for that. We were talking about how you might be able to investigate or solve some of the problems you run into by being scammed. Talk a little bit about the app that you've got that helps out.
Well, the app can really be a preventative measure for folks. So the whole process of going to the source and making sure that you're connecting with the people that you want to be connecting with and not the scammers, we have a case log feature in our app that has a list of all the most commonly called organizations, financial institutions, medical, law enforcement and regulatory agencies. And so you know that that number is verified and actually belongs to the entity.
Very good. So if you get a call from somebody and the number doesn't match what's on the app, it might not be a real number.
That's true. So I would advise people to just go ahead and it's super easy because you pull up the case log. You can call right from your mobile phone.
Can they get the app
number
from the Google Play Store and iTunes?
Both. It's available on both. Obviously, it's free. It's called the ID Theft Help app, and it's from the ITRC.
And I imagine companies are really happy to. Do they provide you with this information because you're helping them not be a part of a scam, right? So if it's a major financial institution, they want their contact info to be part of your app so people can look it up and say, yes, this actually is like Wells Fargo or this is.
They certainly, we do it all internally because we want to ensure that it's verified. And so we are actually actively checking those numbers and we're making sure that it's the fraud department number that's on there because often that's different than the customer service number. So you are going to talk to the fraud departments of those different organizations and be able to verify. Hey, I just got this call.
So somebody doesn't scam you and send you to a number claiming to be the fraud department that says it's okay to
do
that, right?
That's correct.
Now, we've been talking about individuals, and there's so many more things to talk about individuals, and I know we're just not going to get a lot of it done today, but what about companies? Do companies get scammed as well?
Absolutely, and it's very lucrative because if you have to think
about
your...
You get more money from a company, right?
Well, data is extremely valuable. We talk about data being the new currency, and who has more data, an individual on themselves
so
or a company
not,
that has it on...
It might not be money, it might be data they scam.
Oh, absolutely.
Whoa, I didn't think about that, which would be worth a lot of money.
The thieves are, they are so clever. It never fails to amaze me how they think to monetize
our data. So an example,
what would
an example be of a company getting scammed? How would that work?
Right now, there is a huge issue with CEO spear phishing. That's what we're calling it. And this is where...
CEO spear phishing.
Correct. And this is where the scammer is reaching out to high-level employees or employees that have access to sensitive data, things like employee payroll records, maybe even intellectual property of the company, but more so the employee records that have their social security number, their wages and withholdings and earnings and all of that good stuff. And they will send an email that appears to be from someone at a high level within the company saying, hey, I need you to send me that, email that to me. And there's so many pathways that they can do this. They can either spoof the CEO or CFO's email.
Spoof it means make it look to everybody else like it's that.
Exactly, yeah. Like it's your legitimate company email. Other ways that they'll do it is they will know what your, the sort of the format of your emails are. It's my first letter of my first name and then last name,
right. Which is common, right?
Right. And they'll just change the actual email address with one letter. They do it with I's a lot because putting a double I, let's say division, the word division mm-hmm. is in your company name. Sticking a double I in there somewhere, we tend to just gloss right over
our
it.
Our brain
we don't
says
even,
the word correctly.
Doesn't autocorrect it, yeah. And we don't even see it. And it's not until later after the fact that they realize, oh, wait, that wasn't even an email from our company.
Do companies get scammed sometimes and the data's taken and they never even find out?
I'm sure that happens. Of course, it's not reported.
Right. It's so not reported because they
don't know.
What a stupid question that was. If they never find out, there would be no way to know, right?
Well, and that's why we think this is vastly underreported. As huge as these numbers are, we've been tracking data breaches since 2006, and we're at over 1,000. It was 1,000 last year, and we're...
Speaking of numbers, you brought some with you that just came out. Some statistics.
They're not even out yet.
Oh, they're not out yet.
She's going to reveal it on our show.
Can we do that?
I'm going to give you... Let me ask the boss. yes. Yes,
you can do
it.
I'm glad you gave yourself permission.
I know. Isn't that
See,
great?
That's why you need to be listening to this show. We get all of the information before it's even assimilated to the public, right?
Our ratings are just going through the roof now. I can tell.
Everybody wants to know what's going on in the world of identity theft. And you know what? You should, because it's a huge problem that's affecting everyone.
So how big is it?
It depends on whose research you're looking at, but it's between 15 to 17 million victims annually.
In the United States or worldwide?
That's in the U.S.
Wow. Jeez.
Annually. So we're looking at about 7% of the U.S. adult population.
Every year.
Not since we've been measuring.
Now, do you guys also deal with helping prevent hacking as well? Or is this all like phishing kind of schemes, something that would be an email coming in? Like, I'm thinking about Target. I think their credit cards machines got hacked. Is that something you guys work on and have ways to that companies can protect themselves?
Well, we certainly are proponents of what the best practices are. Now, that's getting into some really high-level technology, and Target was actually hacked through their HVAC vendor who left the portal open with a password that was like something like admin. Mm-hmm. So
I remember that when that was in the news, because admin's a standard password that comes with software often.
Right. And yes. And
isn't the most common password actually password?
Second most common.
Oh, it is the second most
now,
common.
But it was the first most common for years, and now people think they're being clever by changing the O to a zero or the S's to dollar signs. And newsflash,
still doesn't
please
so much.
Change strengthening your privacy settings and passwords is actually probably one of the strongest things you as an individual.
That's a lot of work, especially if you're on the internet a lot and you sign up for a whole bunch of things. Every single time, and then a two-step verification now, it just seems almost overwhelming. So I got one of those like password keepers that protects it, which now I don't have to remember anything. But what else have you got? You've got a little note in front
of you. Let's hear some of these numbers.
I want to hear more of the numbers that you brought with you, because this is like world event here. First time anybody's hearing.
This is the first time anybody is hearing the most recent results from our aftermath study. And the aftermath study is one where we survey the victims that we helped the previous year and we ask them about their experiences. And it's not just the financial implications and the financial after effects. It's also the emotional, physical, and that kind of turmoil.
And I want to hear the rest of the effects on people. We've got one more break to go. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Identity Theft Resource Center President and CEO Eva Velasquez is with us. When we get back, we're going to hear about the other effects identity theft will have on you if you let it happen. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. You're listening to us on ESPN 1700, but did you know you can watch us too? Watch us on Facebook, visit our BizTalk radio page, share your comments, ask your questions, and of course, we always appreciate your likes and shares. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Glad you're with us today. We're talking about identity theft and what can happen to you and your loved ones and friends if you don't know what to do. One of the cool things we just found out about is the app that the Identity Theft Resource Center has, and it's called the
ID Theft Help app.
And the word app is actually part of the app name?
It is.
So ID Theft Help app.
And they can find that in the Apple Store.
It's on both platforms, Google Play and on the Apple Store. It is absolutely free to the public.
It's a preventative app.
It has both. It has advice and information if you've been a victim on what to do next, and then it has preventative information on how you can, remediate and limit your risk, and also that case log feature with all of the referral numbers.
I want to get back to the effects of identity theft. We talked about, obviously, the money loss in identity theft. Then you were getting into the emotional aspect of it, because I'm imagining it happened to me years ago, but I think I view things a little differently than other people do. I thought it was an adventure, but most people are crushed by it, right? And I can imagine for most people, this is really crushing and terrifying at some point in time. So the emotional impact has to be big.
Well, 75% of our respondents reported that this incident was severely distressing on the scale. And then it was another 13% that said it was moderately distressing. So it was only a very small number that said, really didn't affect me.
I don't think I'm smart enough to be distressed by it.
It really depends on how it's impacting your life. And I think that's the...
That's a good point, because it didn't really take any money out of my pocket. It was just a lot of work to fix it.
a lot of going back and
right,
forth.
Right, right, right.
Well, for the, let's see, for the 12% of our respondents who had to delay educational opportunities and the 22% that had to take time off work.
Wait. Somebody has to delay their education because they're, how does that happen? You can't go to school now because somebody's stolen your identity?
Well, there are different types of identity theft, and right. one of the types is child identity theft. So that's
no way.
Where a minor child's information is used, and they can open credit accounts. We've talked with kids who've had mortgages, homes purchased in their name. And until they remediate that, they can't get student loans.
They can't get the loans. Wow. And so they would be, they actually could not be able to go to school because of this.
Absolutely. It's not that uncommon
thought.
When we look at, especially kids who don't have the resources of parents who can maybe write a check or float them a loan themselves until they get it resolved. If it takes them a semester or a year to resolve that issue, they are permanently behind their peers. Permanently. You cannot recoup that. So think about that when I was talking about the downstream effects. I mean, that is something that they will never get back. How do we measure that lost opportunity?
We really can't
put dollars and cents on it, but how do we measure that?
Now, we're talking about the resources. So some people have their identity stolen, and they don't have the money to hire the attorneys and the accountants mm-hmm. and everybody to help them. What happens if they go to Identity Theft Resource Center? What happens if they work with you?
Well, we have demonstrated that they can get much quicker resolution when they start with us because we give them a game plan based on whatever it is they're experiencing.
So the minute somebody finds out they've been scammed or they've lost their identity or something's happened, they should contact you.
They absolutely should call us first. They should start here.
IDTheftCenter.org is the website, right?
Yes.
IDTheftCenter.org is the website. That's where they should go. First thing.
Yes. And we have a live chat feature on the website as well. So even if they have a really quick question and they don't want to, you know, peruse the website or call the call center, they can just type that in and ask us a question. We can direct them exactly to where they need to go.
My guess is by having somebody like you guys on their side, it does help the emotional impact of it a bit.
My call center advisors often say that part of their job is as the, almost like a therapist or a counselor because they have themselves been victims. Mm. Most of our advisors know exactly how the callers are feeling, and they can tell them with authority, I was able to do this. I got through it. I resolved it. You can do it too. In fact, I want to tell you a really quick story about a conversation I overheard recently in the call center where I could only hear one end, and it was my advisor, Wilma, saying, that's okay. That's okay. You can cry. I'll be right here with you. Mm. And then when you're done, I want you to wash your face and put your makeup on. And then, and it was like, insert identity theft
like
tips
Wilma.
Here. Everybody loves
sounds
her.
Like emotional counseling.
I want to know Wilma. She sounds like a really good person.
She
sounds like she's on top
people.
Of things, too.
That's a true empathy.
Yeah.
So are there pieces of what's the most important pieces of information that you should be protecting? And is there like one or two things that you could tell people that would be the best things they could do to protect themselves? Or is it just way too out there and you have to be on guard for everything?
Protect your social security number, please, by all means. It really is the key to the kingdom. Strengthen your privacy settings and passwords on all of your accounts if you can. But really, I think the key and our mission is to elevate people's appreciation of the value of their identity and the components that are in it. You know, your cash, grandma's pearls, your coin collection, you treat them with reverence. You keep them secure. You keep them safe. You don't expose them to everybody. You need to do that with all of your identity components as well, because like I said before, data, it's extremely valuable. It's almost the new currency, and all of those pieces that comprise your identity, each one has a specific value, and then together there's a tremendous value.
So you have the app, and the app is the ID Theft Help app that they can get for free. Does that help people? Because I'm envisioning somebody out and about in the world with all the different places you go, all the different things. You sign up for this, you sign up for that. I spend most of my life when I'm not doing this and other things on the internet. And it's amazing how many things I sign up for. I just boggle my mind. I've got like 2,800 emails I haven't responded to. That's in the email I use when I sign up
for stuff. We need a separate session. I need to help.
So does the app help people like me? I mean, would I be using that app regularly to make sure that what I'm doing is less exposed to risk?
Yes, and we have some new features. They aren't yet launched. They will be within the next couple of weeks. We're doing it in conjunction with National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, where you will be able to take a quiz and respond to questions and talk about your behavior and actually get an assessment of your risk. And then you can get a remediation plan about what your risk looks like.
I bet I'm at risk a lot.
You might be.
Probably.
We need to talk more.
That's so sad. You know, we got this wonderful world we live in. I mean, sans North Korea and a few other things that are happening. The world is a really cool place right now. The adventures that we're on, the technology is amazing. But that technology is also creating a really big opportunity for bad people that we need to be aware of. And the effort that we put into this, I'm guessing, will pay dividends we never even know about, because it's going to stop things from happening that we don't know would have happened. Did that make any sense?
It did, and it is
good.
Very exciting.
Because I rambled on there a bit.
Well, think about it like the ocean. The ocean is a beautiful and exciting place, but you'll probably wear a life jacket if you're out there in the deep water.
Yeah, because I can't swim that long. Identity Theft Resource Center. Eva Velasquez, thank you so much, President and CEO. I really appreciate the work you're doing. We appreciate you very much. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Enjoyed myself.
You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Up next, Martin Sabarsky, Solana. Great story. We'll be right back, folks. Don't go anywhere.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank our engineer, Jeff Bilodeau, our music by Derek Audette, our interns, Sarah, Andrew, Leah's on camera today, Deidre, and Chrissy. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. We're so glad you're with us. We just wrapped up with Identity Theft Resource Center. I got to tell you, as busy as we are these days, it seems like a bit of extra work to do the things we need to do to protect our identity. But if we don't put that effort in, the time and energy and discouragement and all the things that can happen bad just seems like it would be overwhelming. So maybe I ought to take that quiz and figure out how much at risk
so.
I am.
Probably a good idea.
I think one of the key words is awareness. When that phone rings, just don't go on automatic pilot. Pay attention to who's on the other line.
Well, I just never fess up to being me. Okay,
well,
I got a laugh
to do
out of that.
That's one way to do it.
I work
it.
Really hard for those laughs. Thank you very much. Okay, Martin Sabarsky is with us, CEO of Solana. It's a company that is in the algae business, for lack of a better word. I am so excited about this. Martin, thanks for being here today.
It's great to be here, especially on radio. I've been told I have a face for radio.
Yeah.
Well, we were actually thinking the opposite.
Yeah.
Thanks for Facebook Live, though, so hello.
There you go.
Yeah, okay, before we get started, I just have to mention, you have an education and a career that just I love. You graduated from Brown with a double major, right?
Bio and poli sci, that's right.
Harvard
Law School.
And from what I understand, did you go there as a freshman?
So I went to undergrad.
I'm sorry,
at Brown.
You went to undergrad at Brown. Right. No, I'm sorry. Did you ever go in the freshman the cafeteria?
Not at Harvard.
I heard it's like the Harry Potter thing. Somebody told me that. I've never been there.
I wouldn't doubt it if that's what you heard.
Harvard's got to be a good school. And then your MBA from?
From UC San Diego, the Rady School of Management.
Wow. Congratulations. Well, you got a good education.
Good credentials.
I learned a lot, and really where I am at Solana is the kind of the culmination of bringing together a lot of the biology, the science, the technology, the policy, and the politics, which go into deploying a technology that's as interesting as this is very sustainable, but it's also a challenge, especially because it's very capital intensive. And so it allows me to bring together a lot of the skills that I learned in college, as well as a transactional lawyer.
And you have done some work in investment banking as well for one of the big firms.
I am in two different 12-step programs. I'm a lawyer and investment banker. That's right.
So you've got a great career to be here at Solana. Now, I would love to spend more time on your background and career because it's fascinating, but let's talk more about Solana, because this story, I'm sure we could spend hours and hours and hours on algae. I've been following algae along for a long time. I mean, I started subscribing to Mother Earth magazine when I was a kid.
Good for you.
And they've been talking about algae for a long time in there. Tell us a little bit about Solana and what you're doing from a top-down view.
Sure. First, I'll tell you a little bit about algae. So algae is nature's original plant, and they are one-celled plants that if you have enough nutrients and they live in the sea as well as in freshwater environments, they'll double every day or more than double once a day. And so they're the most productive plants on Earth. And since they were here billions of years before animals and even land-based plants, they're the most diverse plant on the planet.
They physically double in size daily?
They'll have one cell becomes two, becomes four.
They're like the rabbits of single-celled organisms.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, good analogy.
They can grow exponentially. And so the algae are the source of, in the ocean, about half the oxygen on our Earth that we're breathing right now. And land plants are the other half. But it's also the source of all of the nutrition in the ocean. And so the salmon that we eat is healthy not because the salmon make proteins or make those omega-3 oils or the astaxanthin that makes them pink, which is a great antioxidant. It's because they reflect the food chain.
Back up for a second. The word you just said was
astaxanthin. It's what
astaxanthin
makes shrimp and salmon pink, and it's a really super nutritious antioxidant.
We're going to have to make that one of our words of the week. I like that word.
You can buy it at your local vitamin shop or GNC as a supplement, but it is originally made by the algae themselves.
It sounds like we wouldn't be here without algae.
Essentially, that's right. We are what we eat. And so we reflect sort of, if we eat fish, we're really eating swimming algae. But what we're doing at Solana, in many ways, is cutting out the middle fish and learning how to farm it on land, but in a very intense environment, so that we can harness this diversity of proteins and oils and these nutritional supplement omega-3s or pigments that are necessary for human and animal health. But we've now turned it into a domesticated crop for a lot of different types of applications.
So we actually grow algae in a farm-like environment.
That's right.
How is it? Is it grown on like ponds? Do you put ponds out like the fish ponds where you grow fish? Is it like that?
Very well
on
done.
On land?
Exactly. In many ways, aquaculture and algaculture are highly linked.
Why do we have to grow it if it's so abundant?
Well, if you want to control what you're growing, rather than just have, like in your backyard pool, a random strain of algae grow, you'll get weeds. Like if you're doing any sort of gardening or farming, unless you actively try to prevent it. And so you can do it a number of different ways. And that's where I think the industry has really made a lot of strides in the last couple of decades in learning how to go from strains that are easy to grow and farm on land to ones that Solana specializes in that are much harder to grow, that take more technology, a bit more control, so that we can explore very interesting and different spaces of different products like the proteins and the omega-3s that are not naturally made by the easy to grow.
How many different kinds of algae are there?
You know, I don't know that science knows the answer to that, but
is it
millions.
Hundreds? Oh, millions.
Millions.
Oh, wow.
And then one more
or
question
more.
About English. Is algae the plural? And if it is, what's the singular?
Yes.
Is it algae?
Alga.
Alga.
A-L-G-A.
Alga is the singular.
Alga.
Okay.
That's right.
So,
and if you're in Britain or in Australia, it's algae. So
yes,
there's issues
right.
about the hard versus algae.
So you actually at Solana have a farm in, is it Kona?
It's on the Big Island of Hawaii in Kona.
Oh, okay.
Which is one of the best places in the whole U.S. for growing anything outdoors, particularly algae.
Why so? The climate or the soil? It wouldn't be the soil because you grow this in water.
We are on volcanic rock, so non-arable land. Not just us, but our next-door neighbors, Cyanotech, which is one of the larger and public companies in the algae space. It has the most consistent temperature and sunlight profile of just about any place in the United States. And so there is some amount of seasonal variation in both temperature and sunlight, but it's still more consistent than even great places to live like my home here in San Diego. We still experience hotter temperatures and lower temperatures here in Southern Cal than you will in Kona.
I imagine that's the same reason why all the coffee in the U.S. comes from Kona. It is Kona coffee because of that.
Well, certainly the best coffee does, I think they would say.
Is there other coffee grown? I mean, we're getting off topic, so we don't have to spend any time. But in the lower 48, do we actually grow coffee in the United States?
Honestly, I don't know. But the best coffee, you know, in my opinion, in the U.S. is strictly Kona coffee.
Back to algae.
Right.
Yeah. There's so much I want to ask you about the product and what it can produce.
Sure.
But I want to ask you about the money involved. What you have a 6-acre farm there, I believe. You call it a farm?
It's a demonstration facility.
Yeah. So what is the entry cost into this marketplace to produce commercial algae? I mean, can you set up a farm for $100,000 or is it $10 million? Where do you look at the breakpoint before you can start making algae productively commercially?
Sure. And it's a lot like farming. It depends on how many fields you want and how big an acreage.
So you could do a small farm or you could do a big farm.
You can. I think the challenge is for really small farms, it is a capital-intensive technology and industry. And so there's a minimum size that you wouldn't want to go below.
And I guess that's kind of what I'm asking. What is the minimum? Are we talking about millions of dollars?
It's certainly millions or tens of millions of dollars for most types of products. There is a commercial opportunity for people to grow their own algae for aquaculture hatcheries. which are very small scale, but that's what we're talking about.
Talking about in their backyard.
Larger. Yeah. Or in small fish farms.
Okay, we'll get back to that. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. Martin Sabarsky is with us. Solana is his company. They grow algae. Wow, what a great concept. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
When we get back, we're going to hear about what they make with it. That's the real cool stuff. Stay with us.
Welcome back. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. We're broadcasting today from the ESET studios, ESET Internet Security. Do more. And also get a podcast of today's show and any of our previous shows. Now we're talking. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. I'm going to give a shameless plug here. Listen to the podcast. 5 minutes. That's what we need in the next 24 hours so we get brownie points with Nielsen rating.
Right.
And get that's
that,
what we want.
Right. And get that at ESPN1700.com. I forgot to say that.
Yes. We'll get that. So everybody out there, listen to the podcast. You missed part of this. I know you did. So you want to hear it all. Martin Sabarsky's with us. Solana is his company. Martin, thanks for being here.
Nice to be here.
So this is a relatively new industry, growing algae compared to like automobiles and trains and houses. It hasn't been around that long, has it?
It's longer than most people think. It's certainly for
well, I guess if they've
the
been talking about it since I just after I said that, I thought, well, I read about it in Mother Earth magazine when I was a kid.
Since
so
the 40s
it has
and
been
50s.
Around a while.
At least since the 40s and 50s.
Okay.
Yeah, and a lot of the technology is pretty robust because of that. I think the challenge is finding new types of crops to then scale commercially.
Are there things that people use and see out in the world today that they might not know is either being run on algae-based fuels, and just do we interact with it without even knowing?
On the fuel side, not so much. That's a development stage product. But there are a lot of algae-based nutraceutical supplements. We talked before the show on
nutraceutical.
Nutraceuticals.
It's not a pharmaceutical.
Not a pharmaceutical.
Another new word. I love learning new words.
Buy at GNC and Vitamin Shop and other supplement stores. Spirulina is probably the world's largest algae-based product, which is a supplement, nutraceutical, if you will, that can be sort of poured into your smoothies. You can take it as a supplement, as a standalone. It's highly nutritious, very high protein content.
Do they make it in chocolate?
You can probably find infused with it, spirulina, sure. But they don't necessarily make some of the compounds that Solana is interested in, which have to do more with omega-3 oils, which are important and essential for health and life, as well as some of the specific types of proteins and pigments that our high omega-3 producers make.
So what other products are you focusing on, or what are the products Solana's focusing on to create with the algae you're growing?
Sure. And so fundamentally, what Solana's doing is developing a platform around the whole algae that we like to grow, which is a specific strain of algae that makes EPA omega-3s. These are one of the two key omega-3 oils that we humans get and fish get from algae in the ocean.
And omega-3s are specifically healthy for your heart?
Actually, our brains, as we're sitting here talking right now, are about 10-12% DHA omega-3, so they're actually structurally part of our nervous system.
So it's good for the brain?
The DHA is really good for the brain. EPA, which is what Solana focuses on, is much better for the heart, perhaps, cardiovascular, and you really need both.
Coming from a guy that's had 3 heart attacks, I like that research. Keep it up.
Avocado and fish oils and some other things are very high in omega-3s. Is it more concentrated in algae? Why would people, or is it less expensive to produce?
In our case, we're focusing on the type of omega-3 that isn't easily found through things like avocado or flaxseed or walnuts. So there are different
omega-3
types of omega-3s.
So omega-3 isn't a singular. There are multiple kinds of omega-3s?
It's like saying you should take vitamins. Well, which ones?
Oh,
they're very different
That's
from each
question.
Other.
I just assumed that omega-3 was omega-3, but there's different types of it.
There are really two very valuable ocean-based omega-3s, and there's one that's based on other sources. And so we focus on the one that's very hard to do any other way except either from extracting it from fish and krill, and we're really fishing out the ocean, so that's not very sustainable, right? The amount of fish and krill that we capture is going down, not up, as we overfish the oceans. So we've been farming a particular strain of algae that is high in EPA omega-3, and it's hard to make EPA any other way, frankly. But once you have a strain that can make enough of, we call it sort of liquid gold, EPA omega-3 that I'm holding in my hand here, it gives us the opportunity to leverage the other parts of the algae biomass for things like foods and feeds based on the protein-based meal that's left over.
So the same algae produces multiple products.
That's right. And very much like a barrel of oil is fractionated or cut into different fractions, with some of the fractions going to be turned into fuels. Some also go to chemicals or textiles or pharmaceutical products.
Is there any waste in algae, or is it all used?
Well, ideally, for any process where you spend a lot of money up front for the farm, you want to use everything
you can. Everything you can, right?
Which also increases the environmental sustainability of the process. And so Solana has always been committed to multiple products from the same crop that we would be harvesting, some of which might go to fuels and chemicals, but the more valuable parts actually are for the nutritional applications. Most recently, though, we're super excited to be able to announce, which we'll formally announce next week, a highly successful algae ink trial done by our partner Living Ink in Colorado using the very same biomass that is our high omega-3 producer.
Like an ink for writing?
INK, not the company.
Right, INK, ink and printing applications. And there was an ink run done with a commercial printer. That's a silk screen that you're holding in your hand, Bob, but it was a flexographic printing, which is based on, and it's a process that I'm not an expert in, but it essentially was comparing regular petroleum-based ink packaging and recognizing petroleum-based ink is effectively toxic, and comparing that to the black ink that was made from Solana's green algae. And for those who are on Facebook Live or in the studio, we did a comparison, and you can see that the algae-based ink
looks great, denser,
frankly, performed better than, not even just equivalent, but better than the petroleum-based.
What about the end-user cost? Is it significantly more expensive or about the same? Or?
Well, and this has been part of the challenge, I think, for the industry. And what we've been committed to at Solana is products and processes that don't require a subsidy or a premium compared to the less sustainable product that it would replace. Mm-hmm. And so with the ink product, with the omega-3 product and the like, we're looking for no more than, you know, in terms of pricing, no more than what the market is currently bearing for that product category.
And you're producing it with a sustainable product.
That's right.
How long does it take to regrow algae? Once you harvest it, I'm assuming you can only grow so much in a certain area, right?
Well, certainly for any crop, you're limited by
the area.
By the
you
area.
Harvest that. How long does it take to get another crop up? Can you, like with wheat, we know you harvest it once a year.
Right.
With other things, can you harvest algae multiple times throughout the year?
We'll harvest once a week from a pond.
Once a week?
Once a week. And so we have
that
many, many,
really
many seasons.
That is really sustainable.
That's right. Especially in Kona, where, again, the temperature and the sunlight's very consistent. We're also using seawater rather than fresh water. So compared to traditional agriculture, which is very
water intensive. I bet seawater costs less.
Well, it probably costs a lot less, and it's a lot less controversial because we don't have enough arable land and fresh water to make enough protein through crops or animals to feed 10 billion people on the planet. So we have a problem.
Right.
And we think that saltwater-based algae or brackish water algae, like what Solana does, can be part of the solution for bringing on new large quantities of protein, but also oils, either for fuel applications or these very healthy and high-value omega-3 applications.
Have you thought that you're onto something cool here?
You know, I've spent the last 10 years at this company. I've spent more time doing what I'm doing at Solana than anything I've ever done, and I believe it will be my legacy, frankly.
Do you think the future of diet is we're going to have all sorts of supplements and we'll all eat some sort of basic grain and then supplement with things like algae just because there's too many people? Like, we can't have all that animal protein.
Well, I think if you could look at beef, which is maybe the worst, it's something like 10 pounds of feed needed to make every pound of beef, right? And a lot of land and water. And so we need to do something different. People are talking crickets. I'd rather talk algae before we have to talk insects and crickets.
Hang on just a second. Martin Sabarsky's with the CEO of Solana, a company that's going to make a lot of products our kids and grandkids are going to eat and use. I'm positive of that. You're listening to Biz Talk, Believing is Seeing Talk Radio. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
Don't you go anywhere. When we come back, the best information yet. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Biz Talk Radio, Believing is Seeing. I had to think for a second. Tomorrow, our in-studio guest will be Guy Iannuzzi with Mentus. Be sure to tune in for that. Should be very, very interesting. I'm Montana Smith.
I'm Aaron Cannata.
And I'm Bob Ryan. Glad you're with us today. We spoke earlier with Eva Velasquez. She's president and CEO of Identity Theft Resource Center. You can check them out at idtheftcenter.org. Check them out there. They also have an app you can download. The information is there when you look it up. Martin Sabarsky is with us. He is the CEO of Solana. It's a company that grows algae. And Martin, are you actually physically making products out of it right now?
Yes,
or are you growing it for somebody else to make the product?
I would say yes and no. We have been producing, I would call it, demonstration quantities to support trials for the high-protein meal that we think can be a future product, for the omega-3 supplement that is a future product, but we now are at the point where we're ready to commercialize for the ink application that we talked about in the last segment. So arguably, the inventory that we already have represents really our first product that we should begin selling imminently.
How long have you been setting this up to sell? I mean, you know, biotech companies can go for a decade easily and have a burn on their finances, and investors keep putting money in and money in.
That's right.
Has Solana had a run like that where it's taking a long time because of the R&D to get the product actually out the door?
That's a good question. And really, this is the seventh year that I've been CEO. And beginning when I became CEO 6.5 years ago, we repositioned our focus around these high omega-3 algae strains because we have essentially a farming technology, but it really matters which crop you want to grow in terms of what the economics look like. And so we've been relying in large measure on funding from Department of Energy and Agriculture in the form of grants. And
I mean, obviously the government's going to be interested in producing this to take the pressure off of the oil-based products.
Was this specific strand selected because of you knew it was going to produce ink, or was that a happy byproduct of it saying, oh, well, we can actually do this also?
The ink really found us, and our partner Living Ink found us. We had already been developed a reputation for being one of the larger, more consistent producers of algae biomass. It's hard to get a ton of algae if you just want to go find it. It's not on the open market, right?
So I couldn't just go get a pickup truckload of algae somewhere.
Well, certainly not something like we could produce, which is, you know, higher value than just the random things that might
be growing.
You can
get the algae out of people's pools.
Right.
Not usable stuff.
Not making omega-3s or other valuable proteins and oils. But so since 2011, we've deployed about $30 million total in this platform for high omega-3, high EPA omega-3 algae. About 80% of that has been non-dilutive financing, grants and collaboration revenue.
Non-dilutive meaning they're not taking equity in the company.
We didn't have to give away shares of the company. About 20% has been more traditional sort of dilutive investment. We have sort of a growing list of marquee investors in Southern California, which we can talk about. But that's the way to go cheap but slow. And now that we're on the cusp of commercialization for both ink and for the omega-3 application, and hopefully for feed as well, we really are looking to bring on more money at Solana and as an industry to go faster and, you know, deeper.
Obviously, there's a lot of money out there for deals like this. And my question about the people that put the money in is really around the desires of the investors. Do you have investors that are investing, obviously because it's a good potential return on their money, but because they love the product, they love what you're doing, it's meaningful?
I think that's right. There's an emotional connection, but you still have to make money, and that's also true for those.
No matter how much they like it, if they put money in it, they want to get a return on it.
Well, I think that's especially true for what you think about the products. If the product's going to require a subsidy, for instance, it may be a great product in terms of its features and the like, but its economic sustainability is low or maybe negative. And so the challenge I've had as CEO and my colleagues in the industry is defining ways of finding the right products, finding the right business models and partners that can be sustainable without an ongoing subsidy. And
you mentioned
have that
something.
Now.
Most of our listeners probably don't know that San Diego is the center of the universe for this, in at least the United States, right? For algae production.
I would say the world.
Species.
At least I don't know of a city or region, if you
Who
include
knew?
Southern
is,
California.
Yeah. Is there collaboration? Do you speak with other people in this field? And what are some of the other things that they might be doing that excite you just about algae in general?
Well, sure. And I will say that at least as far as San Diego County is concerned, if you add up all the dollars that have been invested or have been sort of provided as far as grants are concerned or collaboration revenues and the like, it's over $1 billion. We have one of the largest spirulina farms in the world just east of us in Imperial County, owned by a company called Earthrise, which also has a farm, similar farm in China.
So it's a billion-dollar industry just here in Southern California.
Certainly, from an investment standpoint, and I think a lot of the reasons for that have to do with the fact that of the three large biotech clusters in the U.S. Boston, San Francisco, and San Diego, we're the furthest south, right? So it's better sunlight. We also, I think, have a great relationship, industry and academia, with UC San Diego and Scripps Institution of Oceanography, who are leaders in algae research, and so there's a lot of cross-fertilization between
Scripps
the academics.
Scripps has its hand in a lot of things that people don't know about.
I think that's right.
Celestial bodies as well as water. I mean, they're pretty intense in the diversity they've got. Also, Boston has winters. Can you grow that's algae true. In the winter in ice?
You know, there's algae in Antarctica and in lots of places.
So
that's seriously? Where, that's where krill get their energy and the you know the reason why they're healthy
that's
as well.
That's a pretty hardy, like, what is it? It's a plant. It's a pretty hardy plant, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
But certainly the growth rates are better for
in
most
sunlight.
Strains in sunlight and better in you know, a warmer temperature.
What's
sure.
the most exciting thing that you're dreaming about? I mean, ink is pretty cool. There's a lot of you can do with it. You could probably make a lot of money with it. Omega-3s are great.
Yep.
But what are you dreaming about? What looks really cool to you that isn't quite there yet or maybe is down the road? Ways.
Well, you know, there was a lot of enthusiasm around biofuels, and I think the challenge has been that there's a reason why we run our civilization on petroleum. It's cheaper than milk. And so that's a really difficult lift if that's going to be your main product,
so as long
or even
as
your, worst, your sole
cheap,
product.
As long as oil's cheap, algae's not going to be competitive as a biofuel, but if oil goes up to $200 a barrel, it's going to be a big, it's then all of a sudden this might be cost effective.
You know, yes and no. I think if that's your main product or sole product, there were companies that really thought they could get there on fuel alone. Mm. Solana's always been committed to fuel and, where that was one of the products, but not the main product. And so by having strains that can both walk and chew gum at the same time when it comes to fuel, we can do both.
And a lot of people don't realize you can cut petroleum with up to maybe 20% algae-based biofuel, right? And put it in a normal engine. So any you might be driving around on something that has some amount of biofuel in it. Are you guys currently selling the biofuel?
We are not. We have one of the world's largest agreements with a major oil refiner, Neste Oil, in Europe for future commercial facilities where we would supply them with future large volumes of an algae crude oil that they would turn into diesel or jet fuel. And in that case, it can be 100%. This is a drop-in for diesel. It is diesel. It's not a biodiesel. It's diesel.
Where do you think you're going to be manufacturing all this? Is it going to be in the islands, Hawaiian Islands, or are you going to find other sources for manufacturing?
We're probably going to start in Hawaii because that's where we are. And a lot of this is about de-risking and making investors feel comfortable to come into the water. And so the easiest is for us to expand where we are in Hawaii. We have about 50 acres just to our north where we can expand. On the lava field on which we currently sit.
You're on the lava field side of the island.
Right next to the airport.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, on the dry side. But ultimately, the sun is shining.
That's what I meant to say, the dry side, yes.
Yeah, so the sun is shining 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Anywhere where agriculture is done, particularly coastal, could be, and if it's reasonably flat, could be a candidate spot for algae. So that's just places like Northern Africa, Southern Europe, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, Australia, Philippines. So there's a lot of different options for as long as the sun is shining and you have reasonably consistent weather and access to seawater. So really, this could be a game-changing addition to the protein and oil equation.
So the Middle East could grow this as a replacement for the oil they're going to run out of someday.
You know, the Saudis recognize they can't eat the oil, and they're sitting on a lot of coastal desert that is not productive for growing food or feed, which they can't really grow in quantity. They have no fresh water. So it's a perfect type of technology for that region.
What about Africa? You would think there would be a lot of space there they could use it as well.
Absolutely. There's a lot of places. It's a big continent, both southern and eastern and northern.
Wow. I can't believe our time is done. Martin Sabarsky, thank you so much. CEO of Solana, an algae company. You're not making consumer products, so they probably won't see your brand just yet. But thank you for being here. You've been listening to Biz Talk. I'm Bob Ryan.
I'm Montana Smith.
And I'm Aaron Cannata.
You folks have a great and prosperous day.